A new guideline from the American Academy of Neurology identifies the best drugs to treat spasticity or muscle tightness in children with cerebral palsy. To learn more, visit AAN.com.
Whoa! Welcome to WRUW, time traveler guy.
Oh my gosh, what are all these silver discs? Is this your money?
No, those are CDs. Don't you have those?
No way. In the year 2014, WRUW finished digitizing all of their music onto the computer. We haven't seen a CD in years.
2014, you say? Whoa, we better get started.
Thanks to listener support, WRUW has began digitizing our entire CD collection. By 2014, we'll have over 170,000 albums digitized. That's just under 2 million songs. We'll be able to instantly find your requests from our studio computer, and our entire music library will be protected from damage by not one, but four separate backup systems. We want to ensure that our collection of rarities and favorites is around for the next generation of music snobs.
Hey, aficionados, please.
WRUW would like to thank our listeners for helping us become one of the first non-commercial stations in the country to digitize.
Oh. What's in the punch? I just uploaded all over the lawn.
Sir, you forget yourself!
Some of the following material may be considered indecent or objectionable by some members of the listening audience. Therefore, listener discretion is advised.
I find that offensive!
Hey, you're listening to WRUW FM 91.1 Cleveland, broadcasting from the campus of Case Western Reserve University. And it's Wednesday, it's a little bit after 10 o'clock, and that means the show is Press the Button, bringing you noisy weirdness every week from 10 till midnight. And this week is no exception. Commence with whatever it is I'm doing, and it'll all work out in the end.
Pseudonyms is Alpinet.
However, there was a great deal of support from the Marshall Space Flight Center who had a comparable operational group working there with their contract.
Mendoza and Cruiser 8-208. You are now ready for dock. Have a nice day here, Jackson. I'm Jackson, Cruise Controller 8205. If you have any problems, let me know.
Challenger 3 of the booster's third stage, then continue the three-day coast to the moon.
Yeah, okay.
Even as Cernan, Evans, and Schmidt headed toward the moon, directly below the Apollo 17 control room, Flight Director Don Putty ran his crew through a launch simulation of the first Skylab.
As you're probably well aware, we are still working on other programs. Skylab being the prime effort starting in the spring of next year. We're also working on the swap we're making with the Russians, which will take place in 1975. And of course, we've got quite a few of the flight control team as well as other surveillance involved in the work on the shuttle. So it's the start of a new era, I hope.
Skylab, of course, will fly in the spring of next year. With three men going up and spending 28 days, and then 2 months later after they land, we'll put three men up for 56 days. They'll come down, and 30 days later, another three will go for 56 days. So year of 73, calendar year, will certainly be a busy one from the standpoint of manned spaceflight.
December 10, 1972. America and Challenger went into orbit around the moon.
Houston, this is America. You can breathe.
The next day, December 11th, Cernan and Schmidt entered the lunar module and undocked.
You look just as pretty in Earthlight as you do in sunlight.
With the command module in the distance, they passed over their landing place, a valley in an area of the moon called Taurus Littrow. Here they hoped to find the youngest material yet sampled, and direct evidence of lunar volcanoes.
You're looking real good, Jim. Right down the line.
Oh, man, we're level with the top of the beach now. Okay, stand by for pitchover. Oh, are we coming in? Victor is proceeded. And that is Houston, Earth Camelot. Wild target. I see it. We got them all. 42 degrees, 37 degrees, to 5,500. 53 degrees. Okay, I've got Jorge, I've got Poppy, I've got the triangle. That's 2,500 feet, 52 degrees. H-dot is good. 2,000. H-dot is good. 2 is good. 1 down at 10. Cut the H-dot. The 2 is good.
surface of that. Little forward, Chief. Finger forward a little. 90 feet. Little forward velocity. 80 feet. Going down in 3. Getting a little gust. Going down about 2. Very little gust. Very little gust. Stand by for touchdown. Stand by. 25 feet. Down in 2. Feels good. 20 feet. Going down in 2. 10 feet. 10 feet. Cut contact. Stop push. Engine stop. Okay, Houston, the Challenger has landed.
Roger, Challenger, that's super.
Houston, you can tell America that Challenger is a short missile.
December 11th. Sainan, Lane Schmidt left the lunar module to begin their first EVA.
As I step off as the surface at Taurus Littoral, we'd like to dedicate the first steps of Apollo 17 to all those who made it possible.
Their first job was to unload equipment, including their rover, the electric car in which they would drive to the exploration sites.
That's beautiful. This has got to be one of the most proud moments of my life, I guarantee you.
We thank you very much.
As Cernan drove the equipment-laden rover, Schmidt carried the scientific experiments package called ALSEP.
Hey, you need me, Gene? Well, I'm going to go deploy an ALSEP. Have at it.
In Houston, scientists in the science support room watched, correlating and directing their movements.
Okay, Bob, I've got my tools of the trade right here.
As Schmidt set up the various experiments, Cernan drilled a series of holes, both to collect core samples and to implant experimental probes.
Yeah, well, we're out here to get the market catalog for sure now.
Yeah.
Man, it didn't feel like this stuff was that hard. No, I'll get it. I knew there was something. I need to get the jack in over here. A little sec. Let me put some weight here.
At least not slowly, though. Very fast.
I'm going to get this thing out now that I've got it.
Boy, you know, that's what you call getting down into your work.
Yeah, it's 29 and a half minutes from now, but remember, they left this side a little bit late.
There it is. Okay.
Well, Jim, you better make it clear to Parker that we got to pull out.
On the moon and on the Earth, they were fighting time now. There are just so many hours of oxygen and water in the backpacks. So many hours of life in the vacuum of the moon. With the ALSEP functioning, they left the site for a shortened sampling traverse.
Well, many parts of the ALSEP are functioning very well. The heat flow experiment is working excellently. It's transmitting back temperature data. The cooling down from the drilling process, and in a few hours they should be starting to get true heat flow information.
Let's see if I can't crack the corner and get that contact. See if I can't get it.
Look at the forward out there.
It was time to head back to the Challenger, activate experiments, and get back inside.
Man. I was strolling on the moon one day in a very early month of December.
Now, May is the month.
May, that's right. May is the end of the month.
As the astronauts rested, engineers in two nations were working out technical problems of the Apollo-Soyuz test program, the first joint Russian and American space mission.
Well, the prime purpose of the Apollo-Soyuz joint mission
to prove out a compatible docking system and demonstrate that we have compatible operational procedures that will let two different countries dock in Spain. I think more than that, it has certainly a symbolic meaning of the two large powers learning to work together in space, which I believe are the new seas of mankind, new frontiers, and work out solutions to problems wherein, although we're very competitive, we can still be cooperative and assist each other. And I think that this Apollo Soyuz program stands for just that.
Oh, what a nice day. Oh, funny, there's not a cloud in the sky, except in the earth.
They would have one task before they got to work exploring. The previous day, they had broken a rear fender of the rover. The dust thrown up was causing trouble. Apollo 16 commander John Young had worked that night in a pressure suit on a way to fix the fender. On the moon, the astronauts put it together. The fender section formed from a lunar mat molded with tape, then held in place with clamps from the lunar module telescope. It was a repair that would last the remainder of the mission. Ben Schmidt moved out to place one of several explosive packages which would be detonated after they left the moon, mapping the lunar subsurface, much as earthly geologists explore for oil. Cernan would pick him up in the rover for the drive to the first site on this traverse, Station 2.
They're somewhere along this rim where they can see.
But they're dropping, Bill, so they must be coming from the entry.
We're right where we wanted to be for Station 2, and it looks like a great place. Thanks, Lodge. It looks like quite a bit of variety from here. Different colors, anyway. Pretty hard, isn't it? That boulder's gonna roll. Man, that is hard. Just don't stub your toe.
The foreground features are somewhat different. That's because they're farther up under the hill, I think. But otherwise, that's pretty hard.
Powdery, it's obviously very cohesive because the bottom of the core is not smooth and very jaggedy and fragmental-like.
We can finish with the core two, then we should be able to go.
If we get that game right.
They would sample several locations on this EVA, but none would cause more excitement than the find at the crater called Shortage.
Precious minutes that run out. Return to the rover, drive back to the
on the moon, the engineers on Earth prepared for tomorrow's day in space.
I have a model here of the space shuttle. As you see, it's one of the Gallery airplanes on top of the propulsion system. The system is going to be designed for all the possible parts we need.
Yesterday, they had explored the south end of the valley. Today, they would go north.
Well, look out for me. The last time you were really good at that for us, we know you'll do it for us.
The experiment itself, the hardware is working perfect. seems to lay it like a road to work. Everything is going to be properly on the road. An important part of the experiment is what we require to understand the operating on the road.
99, proceeded. 3, 2, 1, ignition. Run away, Houston. Extra good. Add 5.
On the descent stage of Challenger, forever on the moon, they left a plaque reading, "Here man completed his first explorations of the moon. December 1972 AD. May the spirit of peace in which we came be reflected in the lives of all mankind. One revolution later, Cernan and Schmidt caught up with Evans and prepared for docking.
Good to see you. Good to have you all back up here. It's been a good trip. Man, that dog is beautiful.
December 16th, burn out of lunar orbit and head home to Earth. December 17th, 170,000 miles from Earth. Ron Evans left the command module.
Hello, Mark.
Wait till you're ready. Looks great.
Evans was retrieving film canisters from the two cameras and the lunar sounding radar. Data vital to the scientists on Earth. Before he got back inside, Evans took a last look at the crescent Earth. In two more days, they would be home. December 19th. They rode inside a 5,000-degree fireball through the atmosphere of Earth, stowed in the spacecraft, almost 250 pounds of the moon.
Some material in this program may be found indecent or objectionable by some members of the listening audience. Therefore, listener discretion is strongly advised.
future. Welcome to the 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 future.
24 brings back airmen. Blip beats off 8 enemy fighters. Comes home on 2 engines. To some people, it sounds as if the Liberator comes home itself, while pilot and crew relax and enjoy the ride. To some people, but not to the pilot and crew.
Welcome to Bleep 43. You're listening to...
The men who flew safely back from battle in these planes know the B-24's ability to take punishment is only half the story. A good solid half, but the other half is know-how. It's the sum total of information you have about any plane that will determine whether you can bring it back after it has been badly shot up. Men who have piled up combat missions have said that if they had to do it all over, they'd spend more time during training learning their airplane from one end to the other. They know time invested that way pays off. How it pays off is shown in the following scenes, taken by combat camera crews during operations against the enemy in Europe and the Pacific. Only fuel supply limits the flying time of a B-24 on 3 engines. And the many long-distance two-engine returns recorded in all theaters emphasize the effectiveness of procedures prescribed for maximum unbalanced power performance. If you have to feather, be sure you hit the right feathering button. Then fly your plane in a streamlined attitude, keeping needle and ball centered. Lower 5 degrees of flap for maximum lift and minimum drag, and hold airspeed between 140 and 145 miles an hour. However, if it's necessary to hold formation, higher speeds can be maintained without any difficulty. If number one or two engine is feathered, check your vacuum pump and turn selective valve to the good engine. But while this is sufficient in fair weather like this, if ice is encountered, have one of the crew periodically switch the selective valve from good to feathered engine to keep both de-icer and gyro equipment operating. It's a practice that pays off, as this pilot, returning from Ludwigshafen, can testify. Homeward bound from truck with number 3, Black Hole. If this engine is feathered, remember it powers your hydraulic pump, and you must use the auxiliary, opening the star valve to lower gear and flaps. Then close the star valve for brake pressure, and come on in for a normal approach and landing. Like this one, ending a strike in northern Italy. A three-engine landing, simple as ABC, whether it's one, two, three, or four, that's feathered. Engines provide ample directional control for a safe return. There's this landing in Yugoslavia with one and three feathers. And though it's not as hard to center the ball with one engine out on either side as it is with completely one-sided power loss, even three and four out are no reason for the excitement that caused this pilot to come in too hot. It's almost impossible to overshoot a properly handled 24. If you're high, chop off throttles, drop full flap, high RPM, and point the nose down. If too fast, chop off throttles, high RPM, and full flap. And you'll never barrel to the end of the runway like this. No brakes. Number three feathered and the auxiliary hydraulic system shattered over the Balkans. But it's no insurmountable problem to a pilot who knows his procedures. Before coming in, a chute is securely fastened just inside each waist window. And upon prearranged signal from the pilot, assigned men pull the ripcord simultaneously. Terrific loads thrown on the two chutes may, as in this case, tear one or both. Hence, if the only available runway is short, four chutes should be used. pulling the first two, one from each waist window, as soon as the plane is well on the ground, the pilot should wait until airspeed drops below 100 miles an hour before signaling for release of the additional chute, which should stay intact at the reduced speed. Care should be employed in securing the chutes to plane as insurance against their tearing out waist gun mounts. The camera catches a pilot peeling off at Morotai for a belly landing demanded by a smashed hydraulic system and other damage that prevented manual lowering of the gear. And he's down. A 24 greased in on her belly by a skipper who knows the formula. Slow airspeed to minimum and use full flaps. Pick a smooth, hard surface, a runway if available, and make a normal approach and landing, while the co-pilot reduces the danger of fire by cutting all mixture controls and ignition switches just after contact. A walkaway success.
What came first? The music or the misery?
Duh. Corporate radio brought misery. Here at WRUW, we love playing a variety of new music for you guys to listen to. Whether it's alternative, hip-hop, metal, rap, or whatever else might float your boat. Pretty soon you'll start asking yourself,
did I listen to pop music because I was miserable? Or was I miserable because I listened to pop music?
What more reason do you need to keep that dial tuned to 91.1 WRUW-FM, Cleveland?
I want to know why I'm fine one minute, and the next, my body aches so bad I can't move.
I want to know why my hair is falling out. I'm only 17.
I'm tired all the time. Now, this rash. I just want to know what's going on.
When you don't have the right answers, it may be time to ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662.
Now, they say this about every generation, and they said it about my generation, and it was certainly true then, but it is really, really true now, and that is that kids are growing up so fast these days. You know, it's really amazing, and that's why I think the legal age of consent should be lowered to 15.
Warning. Some of the following material may be deemed indecent or objectionable to some members of the listening audience. Therefore, WRUW recommends listener discretion.
Don't look at me like I'm some sort of monster or something. Seriously, you know?
Hey, you're listening to
WRU. What? You put the microphone on and
I figured you wanted me to.
Well, I guess.
You wanna go ahead?
Okay, you're listening to WRUW FM 91.1 Cleveland, broadcasting from the campus of Case Western Reserve University. My voice sounds all sexy. No.
Been drinking that acetone?
Actually, it was a mixture of honey, whiskey, and rusty nails.
Rusty nails, excellent.
That really gives it that extra kind of...
Yeah, that extra growl. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, so this show is Press the Button. It's on every Wednesday from 10 until midnight, and it's 11, so we're right in the middle of it.
Smack dab.
Something like that. So, I'm going to go ahead with whatever's going on. I don't know, very Detroit techno with other stuff happening.
Apollo 17.
Oh, that was then. This is
now.
Now even further in the past. So, yeah, we'll let that do its thing, and we'll see what happens.
Thank you.
Returning from a raid on Wee-Wa, being brought in with a retracted nose wheel and both inboards feathered. And there's an error here you should be watching for, but it only emphasizes how simple it is to do this right, for the right way is common sense. Have the crew in the bomb bay catwalk, or just aft of the bulkhead. Then, just after the main gear is on the runway, give them a signal to walk toward the tail. Landing's normal in all other respects except one. That one. Don't drop the nose like that. Ease her back on the tail skid. Weight of the crew members will maintain the tail down position, but they must stay aft until ground crews devise a nose support. Evidence at any we talk that for an alert B-24 pilot and crew, blown out tires hold no hazards. The left main tire is flat. With main gear tire bullet ripped over Brunswick, another pilot places his nose wheel firmly on the ground, holds direction by using his outboard engine and braking his good wheel. Right turn left is due to hitting soft ground. This is a reminder that the pilot should do all possible to keep his craft on the hard surface runway for maximum control. Important too is a point this pilot back from Boyesh forgot. With right main tire shot and only number three to hold direction, he landed too near the center of the runway, leaving little room for veer due to lack of outboard power. An outboard engine feathered on the same side as a damaged tire requires an approach well to the side of the runway, away from the platform. With nose wheel firmly placed on the ground, brakes applied to the good wheel, and power shot to the engine on the flat side, sufficient control can be maintained to stay on a wide runway. In cases where the runway is narrow or obstructed, where it may be entirely eliminated by shooting out the remaining good main gear tire. with which a 24 can be brought in with a punctured nose wheel tire is evidenced here in the landing scarcely distinguishable from normal. The pilot took a chance at this point, however, by letting his nose wheel touch too soon. Absolute safety calls for holding the nose wheel off as long as possible, balancing the plane slightly tail heavy, using full elevator trim tab if necessary. Handling your plane in that manner guarantees the kind of landing this 15th Air Force pilot got the rabbit's foot way. Know-how and the toughness of the 24. Home after being flak blasted over Yugoslavia, this B-24 testified to what skill can do with a rugged aircraft. Back across the Adriatic with his plane torn almost in two by a shell that exploded inside the waist, shredding both rudder and elevator controls, the pilot maintained altitude and directional control, came safely back to base. Instantly, to this and to other good pilots, come the answers to such damage. Throw all excess weight overboard, slow airspeed to a minimum, get all crew members forward of the weak point, maintain direction by use of engines and undamaged controls. Use trim tabs if intact. Use the autopilot smoothly. And if rough weather is encountered, reduce airspeed and use the desired amount of flaps. Yes, these are men who know the value of knowing their plane. Victim of a freak accident, this 24 returns as proof of the way a pilot trained to handle standard difficulties can get the utmost in stamina, strength, and performance out of his plane to meet unexpected emergencies. Over Parma, Italy, another aircraft crossing beneath this 24 caught one vertical stabilizer on its nose. So violent was the impact that the stabilizer was pinned on this bomber's twin 50s. Flung out of control, the plane dropped from 21,000 to less than 2,000 feet before a pilot brought her out straight and level. Headed finally home, he had to pour on more power immediately to overcome the greatly increased drag created by the obstruction on the nose. A constant menace and challenge to his skills until the wheel stopped rolling here in Corsica, where, incidentally, even the nose gunner stepped out unhurt. The only film in this picture not shot under combat conditions are these scenes of a controlled experiment flown out of Langley Field, Virginia. Here included for the graphic tips they present on the rights and the wrongs of ditching a B-24. And the experimental plane is airborne, deliberately headed for a water landing. Correctly made here for a slick-surfaced sea, the standard approach and set-down are into the wind. But remember, if the sea is rough, the landing should be made parallel to the wave crests. And here is the same landing photographed in slow motion for analytical study. With crew alerted and prepared to abandon aircraft the moment she comes to a complete stop, the skilled pilot will, at this point, have ordered the majority of his men to the command deck, the only part of the plane that will stay dry after contact with the water. The normal approach is continued, using full flaps to decrease contact speed to the absolute minimum. And this level, three-point position should be maintained, rather than lowering the tail as shown here before impact. Then you'll have what it takes to write a wing and a prayer story yourself, if you have to. not just the rugged playing that has proved she can take a lot of pounding, but the know-how to make her give all she's got and to help her bring you safely home.
Some material in this program may be found indecent or objectionable by some members of the listening audience. Therefore, listener discretion is strongly advised. We'll be right back. You're listening to WRUW-FM 91.1 Cleveland, broadcasting from the campus of Case Western Reserve University. Some material in this program may be found indecent or objectionable by some members of the listening audience. Therefore, listener discretion is strongly advised.
WRUW-FM 91.1 Cleveland.